concerned about and preoccupied with the maintenance of self-esteem. Self-esteem in relation to other people. So narcissists are very frequently concerned about whether or not they are feeling okay, which requires a lot of outside validation to help the narcissist feel whole, or even inflated and grandiose, versus the other face. And there are these kind of two faces of narcissism. There's grandiosity when everything's great, and goodness is internally felt, and everybody else is kind of below or not, or somewhat unimportant. Or, unfortunately, then there's this kind of roller coaster fall down to the bottom of the other face, which is inadequacy, depletion, and emptiness.
I hate that feeling.
Yeah, that's a really rough experience. It's unpleasant. So one of the things that a narcissist is constantly working on doing through pulling attention seeking or interacting with other people to get the validation and the recognition they need is to stay on the high side of that split, the kind of grandiosity split. However, these things shift very rapidly and can shift, without expectation. Often when a narcissist feels angry, hurt, criticized, not responded to in the way that they want to, they can very quickly move from the idealized place to the depleted, empty place. Let's see.
Do you want me to get into some questions? Maybe what I'd love to know is after hearing, I don't know if I'm too close to the microphone, after hearing Jacob speak, does anybody here think they might be a narcissist? Are they questioning it? Don't be sure. Every time I talk to Jacob, I'm like, I'm crazy. I'm a narcissist. I'm nuts. So, what I want to do is start off with a simple question is... I personally believe that social networking is really attractive to narcissists, and it helps them control how they present themselves and get attention and inflate their self-importance. So with that being said, do you think that the internet actually breeds narcissism, or does it just exasperate a psychological condition that already exists in a person? And I'd love all your opinions on it. I know we've got a professional opinion, and then ourselves.
I mean, I think there's no question that the web, even from the beginning, and I'm talking going back to like days where I was on BBSs. I think whenever you give someone a forum where they can promote themselves, they're obviously it does breed narcissism. But I think we're seeing it more now than ever in social media, and I especially think we're seeing it with people who are younger than us. So I think basically it's that echo chamber effect where, you know, if you give someone a chance to throw something out there, it just keeps rippling back and back and back. And, you know, people are going to put out what they put things out because they get retweets. They put things out because they get replies, or people on Facebook will do it. So I think it promotes this behavior in a huge way. And that's why people keep it rolling like that.
I think so, too. I speak to different people in schools all the time, and they're trying to get jobs and do this and that. And I've kind of like, you have to, I speak about personal branding. I'm like, you have to build a brand for yourself, because if you want to go get a job and you want someone to hire you or something like that, if you're not building your brand, someone else is. And when they go to hire someone, they're like, okay, the people look at all your social, you know, stats now and how influential you are, no matter what industry and what you're looking at. So yeah, it kind of breeds it, but it also kind of leads to a kind of bit of like sort of social Darwinism, kind of, because people are like, you know, if you're not doing that or building your brand, then you're kind of just might get left behind.
While many people participate, and you can think about a kind of universal narcissism around, putting yourself out for response, on Facebook or on Twitter or on social media engine. There is something of a narcissistic process of saying, I'm going to present myself so that I can get something back that will validate it and make it whole. that's not necessarily unhealthy, but the you know, the kind of problematic areas I think come up when there's this kind of you know, the rigid, inflexible, overdone stuff. When somebody, you know, can't go to the bathroom without posting it on Twitter. It's you know, there we all, you know, there's a lot of it becomes very clear, you know, somebody kind of starts to do something somewhat compulsively that they may have had a kind of pre-existing condition, so
right.
to speak.
Or, people find it absolutely bizarre that I don't use Facebook. They cannot, like, get over the hump that I, at some point, I stopped using Facebook. They're just like, how can you do the kind of job you do? Or how could, you know, they're like, oh, you don't post pictures of your kid on Facebook. You don't do this on Facebook. I'm like, no, it's fucking weird. It's weird that I know this much about you. We went to high school 15 years ago, and I didn't like you then. And now, you know, and now I know everything. I know what you eat for dinner. Like, to me, that's, like, the opposite end of where the sort of narcissism train is, like, rolling out of control down the tracks, you know?
Yeah. I also think things like clout, like, make you feel like you're in some competition. So you're like, oh, my God, I have to keep doing this. And then you're like, I personally, like, don't do it as much anymore because I realize it, like, just builds anxiety in me. Because you're like, what? I'm a 48, but my friend's 52. Like,
they keep changing the algorithm.
Yeah. It's just, so we'll get on to the next question where I like this slide. Social networks really allow people to control what people know about them and believe about them. So, I definitely do not share unflattering pictures of myself on Facebook. And as soon as somebody tags me, I, like, rush no matter where I am to untag it. I'm like, that is not a good one, you know. So, do we really believe that people share what they're passionate about? Or are people just sharing what they want to be perceived as? So, I'm going to throw this question over to Casey because you are the self-proclaimed narcissist here today. So, how much of what you put online is crafted and how much is actually real?
There's a lot of... Everything I post online is real. It's not, I'm not being someone I'm not. If you read my blog and you follow me on Twitter and then you meet me in real life, the most only common thing is people think that I'm taller. but other than that, they're like, wow, you're exactly what I thought. And so everything is real, but it is very crafted. I don't talk about sex, dating, relationships. I don't ever mention that stuff on my blog. And I also don't really talk about when I'm sad. Like people, I was just in an article and a paper at home and They had to ask me the question, so you're not always happy. And I was like, are you retarded? I'm like, of course I'm not always happy. I have days when I'm sad. But I blog about, you know, maybe sometimes I will write about how I feel, you know, or I went for a bike ride. And I'll post maybe not a lot of writing if I don't feel like blogging or I don't feel like sharing. But it's crafted, but it's and it's real, but it's not. I'm really selective about what I put online. So, you know, I don't post pictures of me like looking too scandalous. I don't post pictures of me like I try not to do any tweets after 2 a.m. I don't get wasted and tweet because I don't want to I don't want that. I have crafted the image that people perceive. You know, I'm perceived as I am a nice girl, but I try to keep that kind of a bit wholesome and friendly and positive because the brands that I work with and the campaigns that I work on, that's why people want to work with me because I'm brand safe and they know that I'm really fun and that's why people follow me and gravitate towards me. I get a lot of emails from girls around my age saying, you know, when I'm having like a shit day at work, I'll go to your blog and that really cheers me up and that's inspiring to me. It makes me want to keep sharing more of that positivity because I know that I'm really lucky to have an awesome and fun life that's all kinds of really exciting things and sharing that with people that and can inspire them to be happy or do something else positive, then that's what I want to share.
And Mike, do you feel the same way? Like, do you share, I know you're not big on Facebook, but on Twitter, like, do you share articles that you might read? Like, I love, like, some really bad MTV shows, but I'm not, like, tweeting about how I'm, like, 16 and pregnant is my favorite show. You know, I'm you know, crafting things that are a little more, you know, intellectual to share. You know, do you find you do that as well, or...
Purposely tweet smart articles.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
I actually kind of think I do the opposite. Like, I'm much more likely to tweet, like, something kind of, like, violent or fucked up than I am that. Because I almost feel like having been on Twitter for a while now and interacting with so many people, like, that's kind of what they expect from me. Like, they expect me to come home with a black eye. Or they, you know what I mean? Like, oh, look, you know, he's got arrested again this year. Like, you know, like that's what they kind of expect. So in a weird way, I actually almost gravitate towards the same way. But at the same time, because of my job, people know up front, like, I don't advertise your brands personally. Like, this is, like, you know, there's, like, a firewall there. Like, you can't pay me to tweet your stuff, so that's why I'm not brand safe. But, you know, but I mean, I don't make anything up, but I think everyone selectively filters online. I would find that there's a very rare person that does not. There's a few of them out there. Robert Scoble, I think, is one of those people with no filter and actually manages to pull that off in a pretty amazing way. Like, his whole life is out there. I mean, his cell phone number is on his Twitter account. You can call him up and he'll answer. You know, he could do it right now from the back of the room. But
So, Jacob, do you think that if we're investing so much energy into improving kind of how we are perceived and present ourselves online, that we're actually missing genuine opportunities to improve ourselves?
Well, there's
offline. Sorry.
I'm not sure about genuine opportunities offline, and that's a large question, I think. But I think, like, one thing as a generality around you know, narcissistic presentation online is there, you do have to kind of watch out for overinflation of positive qualities. You do have to watch out for things that I might describe as kind of false self or inauthenticity, and also a certain kind of protection from what the kind of true self or the kind of vulnerable core of the narcissistic person that's, like, inside, you know, even as much as they're outside saying, look at me, inside they're very kind of sensitive and can dish it but can't take it, and are kind of protecting themselves, and will keep certain things that might make them feel exposed out of the conversation.
Okay. I'm just going to let your guest on there for you. We're going to get a little bit more into how narcissism relates to branding. But as more companies are hiring online influencers that are narcissists and they work with them, it's usually working with sort of, I guess, famous people and internet famous people. They're famous, but you know what I mean. There's less formal contracts in place usually, and a lot of the times contracts aren't even existent. So maybe Casey and Mike, since you both work with brands on this, could you let us know a little bit more about how brands should approach working with, you know, the internet famous to ensure that they both get, you know, what they want out of the deal?
Yeah, I've been working with different brands for a long time, and a lot of times it started out with, like, hey, we want to give you this free thing. Why don't you put it on your blog? And I'm like, sure. If it's something valuable and that I like. And I did how I kind of really built up my following is I did everything for free because I wanted people to know what I was good at doing. And but I think what really helps people now is, like, defining people's objectives and what they want. Like, does the brand want you to maybe do a review, or do they want to do, like, a sponsored post like I've done? I only work with brands and the things that I really like, or else it wouldn't make sense. You know, if I was talking about something with, like, baby diapers, people would be like, how much did they pay you? You're totally lying. But, you know, if people, I've just started getting now some type of, like, contracts from brands, and a lot of times it goes through PR agencies where it's, okay, well, you won't talk unfavorably about the brand, you won't say, and they're kind of defining some parameters that they want you to stay within. So still allowing you to have the freedom to, like, have your own opinion, but kind of putting some parameters on things like that. And if it's, you know, maybe it's something simple as coming to an event and using the hashtag, and they give you the gift bag and they follow up later and maybe we'll send you something. I think just kind of laying things out. Like, sometimes people ask about metrics, and sometimes I don't give them. There's a lot of things you can easily find.
See, I would never work with anyone who wouldn't give me metrics.
Yeah, I often don't.
Like, the few times where I've been in a situation where I was forced to work with someone where they didn't give metrics, I found it to be a ripoff. And I think if you're a brand and you're out there working, there's a huge number of people who maybe they do have a ton of Twitter followers or Facebook people or whatever, but, you know, and they want free stuff and they want money. And without metrics, your brand...
A brand's offering money to, like, a contract and something that's like, sure, fine, then we'll work together. But if it's just, like, for some free stuff, like, go look at my Twitter followers and my clout score.
I think that's why, even with the metrics or without them, I think a lot of times it's just not worth it for a brand, because you don't... Like, it really has to be the right influencer in the right sphere, and you need to have a ton of real influence. But I think the key thing for people, for PR people or any marketing person working with an influencer, is actually look at their stuff because I know like you're lazy and you want to get that list done and I need 50 Twitter people to send this to and da-da-da and you just want to blast it out. Like, we all are guilty of that. But you got to put them over the barrel for metrics and actually look at what they do to see that it's a real fit. And a lot of people don't, which is why all of a sudden something will show up at your door one day and you're like, why would they send me diapers? Or this happens to you a lot. You get a lot of weird stuff because of the name of your company, The Blog Studio, and everyone thinks that you're a blogger, and you're not. Like, you make blogs, you design blogs, you're a developer, but you still get a lot of weird blogging-related items.
I do. I get so many things, like hair extensions and makeup, and I think if you've ever read the blog on The Blog Studio, you know it's about, like, social media and technology and, you know, or maybe, like, events, but it's all in the same space, and all of a sudden, like, and it's really hard when I'm like, oh, I really wanted to know how I looked with bangs, and you're going to find me free clip on bangs? Like, of course I'm going to say yes, but I'm not going to blog about it because my readership would think, why all of a sudden is there a blog post about hair extensions? Like, it just doesn't make sense. So, and it baffles me at, like, these huge companies that approach me on this. You know, I'm sure there's a major budget behind it or, you know, an agency behind it, and a lot of money has been put forth to have them find these influencers, and yet they're picking me, and I'm not right for the space. So
a lot of brands will do, like, I have a bunch of friends that are bloggers, and we all, like, well, we have this kind of thread that we go around and we send the email that comes from the PR agency. So, you know, someone, they send out the same email to everyone. And we, like, have a chuckle. And then we're like, are you going to go to this? Are you going to write about this? And then we're like, no. You know, because it's like, you don't, if there's no, like, personal connection. Like, I really like when PR agencies build up, like, a lot of people that I work with, I build a relationship with them. So it really doesn't matter a lot of times what they're emailing me about. But if it's someone that I know and they have a relationship with me, there's a good chance that I'll tweet it, I'll blog, and I'll do maybe a little mention on something. That's because I have a relationship. Like, a lot of times if it's just like, here's dear blogger, it's like sends an email. Like, I really don't care about those. I want them to make me feel special.
I'm going to ask Jacob if you have any thoughts on this, because I know... in a sense, like, if narcissists are always kind of looking for a better deal, is a relationship between, like, brands and narcissists, do you find it a perfect sort of match because they kind of can both use each other?
Well, narcissists, prototypical narcissists do use, or, I mean, you could use the word exploit, but use others in the field, not necessarily for who, or, like, another person for what they provide them, rather than who they are as separate people. So it's a good fit for, it's a kind of mutual agreement to both use and exploit, because, right, in some ways a prototypical narcissist is operating like a brand, and is pulling for, you know, is looking to get what they want.
Right. That makes sense.
Right.
So, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, grandiose narcissists are highly influential, and you can see that online. Like, we're all very attracted to, I think, narcissistic behavior online that we see other people do. So the one thing about sort of influencers is that they can influence you positively or negatively. They can hate you or love you. So do we have any advice for brands on how they can best deal with narcissists online that don't support their brands and bash them online, and how to approach them? And Jacob and I had a really interesting conversation about how he, you know, actually works with narcissists, like in his office. So yeah. It's interesting to see, like, how to approach them.
One thing, before you talk about the kind of branding element, is this idea of narcissistic injury. So when a narcissist is feeling good, and then gets like I said before, like, hurt, angry, criticized, abandoned, any kind of negative emotions in the context of a relationship, all of a sudden they can go from very high to very low and become enraged, because, and not just because they're upset, but because they lose their sense of who they are. So it's a deeper level of upset. It's negative emotion plus the injury to self-esteem. We call that narcissistic injury. An example would be, you know, in my office, I'm working with somebody who's telling me how much they're, you know, I'm helping them, and how great of a therapist I am. And then I look at the clock for a second to see what time it is. All of a sudden, you know, they boil with rage and like, you know, you don't fucking care about me. you're just here to get my money, and you haven't been listening to a word I say. And they've received all of a sudden, and I've gone from the good other to all the and the idealized other to the devalued, exploitative, kind of mean, uncaring other.
At this point, that exactly what you're saying has almost become like a social media cliche, like the person who like, oh, the line is so long. Actually, it happened here when everybody was getting their badges. What happened? You know, the line was too long. We can't deal with that. I'm the center of the social media universe, so I'm going to immediately get on Twitter and bitch and moan about it. And I think, I mean, I've seen people do that about everything. I mean, I'm guilty of that, especially with airlines. But I think whenever people suddenly feel that they're not getting their due, it's very normal now to go on social media and sort of like flip out to make it, you know, to let people know that you're unhappy with anything, you know, like my toilet paper is too thin to, you know, I just got stabbed in the stomach for my wallet. Like it goes, you know, the complete gamut of that. But that's a very normal social media thing, which yeah. I think totally stems from the narcissistic injury thing totally. We were talking about.
I had that happen. I was taking a VRL train in Canada and the guy was really rude to us. And then me and the girl I was with, I just left the Ottawa Fashion Week. And then we were like, this train, blah, blah, blah. And then I thought that they weren't going to reply as it was the weekend. And they're like, oh, Casey, we're so sorry to hear this happen. And then I'm like, shit. And then so they're like, you know, really sorry. Send us an email. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to get a free train ride. So then I sent an email. And then a couple days later, I ran into the person at the conference. They're like, you don't know me, but I know you. And they still never offered me a train ride. And I was like, I'm not taking a train anymore. I hate VRL again. And it was just like, I thought I was important. And then they liked me. And then they know me, but I didn't get anything. So then I hate them again.
From a practical standpoint, in terms of like response to those kinds of like what I would call like ruptures and mm-hmm. in therapy, with the injury is that one thing you don't want to do is argue the facts during that time, because it has nothing to do with the facts and everything to do with the emotional experience of a person feeling like that, like the you're not attuned to what they need and what they're feeling. So arguing the facts of like the, you know, the value of the product or like, or why they're wrong about what they, you know, that steer clear of that. I would say that like that instead it's really important to simply kind of identify and validate the rupture. I get that when your toilet paper was too thin, it was something that was very upsetting to you. It really pissed you off. It pissed you off so much that you needed to tell the whole world. And really just to not kind of fight against it, but to identify the kind of relevant emotion and let the person know that they are being heard. That's one of the most important.
That's also why your brand or you should always follow people back on Twitter, because if you have one of these explosions and you're not following these people, you can't direct message with them, so it's all going to be public, whereas what Jake is saying is you can kind of like take things down a notch. If you're following them back, you can send them a private message and take this whole nasty incident privately, because basically what you're saying is you can say anything and they're still going to be pissed. So it's like, well, you might as well take it somewhere, where, you know, take it into the back room instead of doing it out in front of the hotel, you know?
Because then as it's public, it continues to unravel, because then they have, you know, other people are watching.
They have an audience.
Self-esteem that has
right.
to be.
Right. And you're smirking because you're like, I love when I have an audience because it makes makes it that much better for me.
I don't cause problems. I'm not a troublemaker.
I'm going to move on to the next question. Since people are creating their own online profiles and bios and blogs, and there's no shortage of social networks out there that help everybody self-promote, you know, my hope is always that people apply the same moral code to their like online world as they do in their offline world, but we know that's not true. And seeing the blogosphere over the last, you know, 7+ years, you know, it used to be where I felt like I get all these like great authentic blogs that you get to read, and now it's like everything's sort of PR'd and crafted and don't really know what's what. So my question is, do you believe that brands are being duped by hiring online influencers that can't execute?
Absolutely.
It's a loaded question. Go for it.
I don't even think it's loaded. I think that's one of the big... I think that's almost going to sort of or is kind of trashing the whole social media world. Once people figured out that they could get free stuff, like, as a culture, we're so materialistic and into money and free stuff that people are willing. That's why you don't see these authentic blogs or much authentic anywhere. And I also think the brand people sit in some back room, they're like, well, we got to get these cool kids on Foursquare to do this. But really, like, at the end of the day, does that convert to sales for your brand? Does that put money in your pocket? Which, if you're a business, that's what you need to keep the lights on. You know, I really think in most cases, especially with brands that I've worked with, it does not. At the end of the campaign, you end up pissed off that you spent money to send all these people stuff, and there's very little influence to be had, except at the highest, highest levels. Like, the people who really, you know, like the Lady Gagas of the world. Like, that's where if she puts your product out there, you'll see immediate results. But the kind of, like, 10,000, 20,000 Twitter, Facebook people, no. I do think they're duping brands for free stuff and money.
Totally. I go to all kinds of meetups where it's like, or not a meetup, but like a press thing, and then it's all the same kind of like blog circle. And then I'll see people that I'll be like, who's that person? Because I've been doing this for a while. And I'll see that person, then I'll go look at their blog, and I'm like, your blog is all like a press photo, a little blurb, and a title. And I'm like, you are just doing this for the sake of like, I have a fashion blog. And then it's like, you just took your pictures from someone else, somewhere else. It's not really the creative. It's not really that personal. And it's just like you are PR scamming the PR people, and they're inviting you. And you're just spinning this wheel of like, like falseness. Absolutely. And like when you go to my blog, like, there's, I don't know, it's really fun. There's lots of stuff. And I'm like, I love writing it.
To be fair, I watched Casey like at work. She used to work for MTV. And I'd watch her like multitask with like the phone and the computer and doing all the stuff at the same time, and I'm like, you are made for this.
Yeah,
I would be spinning in circles.
Totally.
I used to
run the account for Much Music, MTV Canada, and Much More Canada, and my own account all at the same time in all different voices. Take that one, Jacob. but it's like, I see people like writing their blog just so they can get free stuff, and it pisses me off because I'm a real hustler at this, you know, and I've been like, really, everything on my blog is really creative, and I made it all up myself. And
so maybe a take home would be that you have to, you really have to make sure that the influencers can deliver on what they say they can deliver on.
Absolutely.
Because those people are just like, you might as well just go give your t-shirt or product to that homeless guy on the street, because they're going to get the same amount of like views when you walk by, because like really it's not going anywhere.
Actually, more people would see the homeless guy.
Totally.
Kind of like street furniture.
do you think that in the future that peer reviews won't really matter? Like, I know peer reviews are so huge right now. So do you think it won't really matter because we're moving into this real narcissistic online world that everybody's going to know that everybody... I mean, like, at this point, I think it's hard for me to look at a review and actually give it any clout. You know, because I'm like, who paid this person? Yes, with a C this time. You know, who paid this person? And I can investigate enough being online to know, like, what's real, what's fake. You know, how many times I've seen this review because it's obviously copied and paste press release or something like that.
People do that.
But I do know, like, somebody like my mom doesn't know that, and she'd be like, this is the best toaster in the world. Let's buy it, you know? So do you see the future being where the whole peer reviewing and influencer system may... die?
I don't know. Like, I don't, like, I can, I know for myself personally, like, I see people do reviews and I'm like, you just totally copied that. Like, you know, that's silly. But, like, I don't really do that many specific, like, product reviews. But let's say I like doing, like, maybe kind of a campaign. I've worked with, you know, a couple different, I did this thing with Pepsi when Pepsi Throwback came out, the original Pepsi with real sugar in it. So, but I did this campaign. It was like a 6-week campaign, and I blogged about it, and I was like talking about it. And I swear to God, the moment that I took a sip of that Pepsi, I was reminded of my childhood. And I was like, okay, yeah, I can do this, because I was really like, I had an emotional connection. So then when I wrote about it, and then we had an 80s theme party, and I invited all these influencers, and it trended in Toronto, and it trended in Canada, and it was fun and it was real. But that was like a real campaign, and yeah, I got paid, but I was doing real work. Mm-hmm. So if people are just writing about stuff because they're getting it for free, people I think are just going to start seeing through that, and they're going to be like, I'm not reading your stupid blog anymore. Because, like, it gets boring. You got to keep people, like, there's so many. There's, like, I don't know, some crazy number about how many bazillion blogs are created every day and how many posts there are a day. And, like, if you're not doing something that's creative and engaging and fun, then people aren't going to keep coming back. And if you were just posting stale content, press releases, it's, like, boring.
Hey, Mike, I'm going to ask you this next question because I know you have lots of thoughts on this. If a brand hires an influencer that's a narcissist, does society eventually turn on them? Like, can the brand sentiment change from positive to negative? Or do you see it, or you have examples of it, or anything like that?
Yeah. I guess one really sort of crazy story I have about this is a buddy of mine who's here at South by Southwest is a comedian named Chris Gethard, who some of you guys might know. He had a show on Comedy Central called Big Lake. He does a TV show in New York. He was on Conan O'Brien last week. But so he for whatever reason, decides that he wanted to, like, rattle Puff Daddy's nest, you know, P. Diddy. So for whatever reason, he decides that he wants to bust Puff Daddy's balls. So he goes on Twitter, and he starts, like, saying all this stuff about Puff Daddy with the hashtag Diddy Gethard. His last name is Gethard, but it's spelled Get Hard. So for whatever reason, all these, like, people, he has kind of, like, a good following. They all start posting all this stuff with Diddy Get Hard. And so Diddy sees it, and he's like, what is this, some kind of weird, perverted thing? There's, like, thousands of people telling me to get hard. Like, I don't understand. And, like, this goes on for months, and Diddy's, like, real angry, and he's, like, sending messages, like, to my friend, like, why are you doing this? Stop this, blah, blah, blah. But eventually, somehow, Diddy gets in touch with Chris, and Chris explains that he was just busting his balls, and Diddy starts to think it's funny, and they talk, and then eventually Diddy decides to come on his show in New York at the UCB Theater. So it went from this thing where he had all these people attacking Puff Daddy. He was like, ah, oh, fuck Puff Daddy, fuck that guy, to all of a sudden it's like now they're friends, and Puff Daddy, like, comes down to his show at this little comedy theater in New York and, you know, does, like, an entire hour-long show with him on stage that you know, like, the videos are everywhere on YouTube now. So that's one of those cases where it went from, like, this really ugly thing to, like, a situation where I don't think it could have had a better turnout. So I think depending on the people involved, something can go from positive to negative really quickly. You know, sometimes not, but it's definitely possible.
Casey, do you have any thoughts? Like, from my perspective, sometimes, like, an influencer, you kind of use them, like, short-term, like, for little campaigns, and they're not sort of, a full-time person.
I guess I usually work on, like, short-term things. Like, sometimes get stale. I would do some long-term things, but it has to be a brand that I really get along with. But I think when it comes to working on short-term things, I get really offended when someone's like, I got offered in this last summer to go to Lay's Chip Factory for 8 hours. It was 3 hours away, and they were going to film me all day to create some great content for them, and they were going to pay me in chips. And I was like, I'm a, like, you know, I like fashion and style. The last thing I needed is, like, a whole zillion pound of chips. And this 8 hours on a Saturday, and I don't have a car. So how the fuck am I going to get to this 3 hour place? And what am I going to do at a farm? Like, it's a farm. I don't know. I'm not really into that kind of thing. So I was like, I said to them, I was like, well, you can't pay me in, like, chips and chocolate bars. And, like, I'm sorry, that does not interest me at all. And I've done a couple commercials. I have an acting agent. She's like, well, if they want to film you all day, we're going to have to, like, you know, make some kind of thing about that. But I think it's really offensive when someone thinks that I have nothing better to do but, like, go do something like that. Same thing happened with Cadbury, and they wanted to, about this campaign they were doing, they wanted to pay me in chips, and I was like, you idiots. And then, but I turned it around. I said, okay, instead of paying me in chips, why don't me and two of my other blog friends, why don't we all make a little video for your video contest thing that you're doing, and then instead of paying us in chips, why don't you give us money, and then we'll actually make a video, and we'll actually be, like, serious about it, and we'll tell other people to enter your whatever the contest was. And it works. So instead of me being like, damn you, Cadbury, I was like, no, I know how to handle the situation. And I went back to them with an alternative, and I said, hey, instead of just doing something that's garbage, why don't we do something of value? And it worked out better, and now they want to work with me again. And
have you ever worked with anyone that you had sort of positive feelings about, and then you started feeling negatively about you, and you actually wrote about it?
No.
Tweeted about it?
One of the things I really don't do is write negative about stuff. I figure that if I had an experience, and my blog is super positive, I don't want you to come there and be like, wow, Keith is real pissed off today. Because I think, you know, if I'll talk about maybe that stuff offline, but I don't, if I write about something negative, my Google search results, my social results are still going to come up. So if I spend the time writing something negative about a brand that I worked with or I didn't work with, and it didn't turn out favorably, if I write that, I'm still going to be tied to that forever. So I'd rather just keep that negativity offline and not even give them the attention. It's like that, you know, haters going to hate. I'm just
that's
not giving you attention.
Not necessarily like prototypically narcissist. I would say that like when narcissists get angry and have that injury experience, very often they go after you with a vengeance, and insults, devaluation, really kind of destructive energy with the idea that you've hurt me.
I'm gonna hurt you back.
You made me feel bad and hurt my self esteem, so I must crush you in response because I feel envious and full of anger about how inferior I feel in relation to you up high. So that's what very often can account for people kind of going on a personal crusade to cover you with negative feedback, and it can be hard to kind of walk that back. And I think, you know, Mike mentioning like really kind of bringing it into a more private place to have the conversation there is a really good idea. Like, okay, let's all take a deep breath and figure out what's going on here, and
I'm just going to call you every time I've got an issue with a client and a brand and be like, let's talk this person off the ledge.
And bribery works too.
Yeah.
Even times where I've had to deal where clients have had a problem with an outspoken social media person who on the surface is the most self-righteous person, I've never not been able to shut one of them up with a bribe. I'm dead serious. And one of them is definitely somebody you all know who comes across on Twitter as like one of those super self-righteous people, and I shut her right up with a couple $100 bills and her tune changed real fast. So, you know, if you're in marketing or PR, do not be above bribing people if you need to.
Funny talk.
There's a take-home message.
I'm going to ask one last question before we open it up for questions from the audience. I think there's a little bit more for Jacob, but you know, the world is definitely full of narcissisms. I personally think the number is only increasing. So should narcissism still be classified as a disorder, or in the future do you think it should still be classified as a disorder? Because I think we use the word narcissism a lot generally, but it's actually a disorder.
So it's a really tough kind of big question. I would say in general, the way I think about it, there are three different ways of looking at this, at narcissism in terms of definition. There's narcissism in a kind of universal way with the idea that everybody has healthy narcissistic strivings for recognition, for the building of oneself in relation to other people. For, you know, the child falls down, they start crying. Or they don't start crying. They look around to see if the mother is looking, and if they don't cry if the mother's not looking. But if they do, the mother's experience validates the child's self structure. So that's there's a kind of normal narcissism. Then you can talk about the second one, which is like narcissism as style. That's usually what I was describing before. The people who are prototypically kind of preoccupied with this self-esteem maintenance in the context of a relationship. And then at the extreme end, you get narcissism as disorder, like narcissistic personality disorder. Unfortunately, because of this big kind of theoretical battle that we have within psychology, they're going to be removing narcissism from the DSM-5, which is the Bible of mental health, and kind of replacing it with a general personality disorder with narcissistic features. And you know, people have a hard enough time diagnosing it properly. There's so few people who actually recognize it, particularly psychiatrists. They constantly think it's like bipolar disorder or something else, and like over-medicate it when it shouldn't be medicated. So we're going to continue to have a lot of confusion, especially as we pull it off the books. I do think that there is healthy and unhealthy strains of narcissism, and that you do need kind of a pathology concept in my mind. That's my trick opinion.
What's your opinion, Casey?
You know, I think I just like everyone. I guess everyone likes posting pictures of themselves. You're into that. I don't know. I don't think it's. I never thought I had mental problems. I have a really bad memory, so.
They have a session right after this.
No, but I have a really bad memory. I forget all kinds of stuff. My friends are getting mad at me. Like, how can you not remember this? And I'd be like, fine. And I love publishing. I wrote a book when I was like a teenager. I started a publishing company, and when I found out that I could blog, I was like, oh my god, I can blog and I can publish what I want, whenever I want, for free. On my own, and that's when I started. So I didn't write a blog thinking, I'm going to be a blogger. Like, it wasn't even a thing when I first started blogging. I just started writing a journal, and for some people, found it really interesting, and they kept liking it, and they kept reading, and they kept commenting, and it just started growing. And then I found Twitter, and then I made all these friends, and I was like, this is freaking awesome. And then it just kind of built into, now it's a real thing, and I think to myself all the time, this is really happening. This is a real thing. You know, I made this all up. You know, and now it's real, you know? And, you know, so I don't know. I don't think I'm really that bad of a narcissist. I just like me, and I do a lot of positivity and, like, help people with things, do lots of charity stuff. Like, I'm not a bad person, but maybe I'm a bit narcissistic. It's not bad.
I'm going to open up for questions. Has to be some questions. You can just come right up to the mic or put your hand up either way.
So one of my clients is a national fast food chain, and we do a lot of, well, first of all, their target market is a lot of millennials. And the millennials seem to be a little more narcissistic than, say, other groups of people. And we do a lot of contests for give a lot of really cool prizes away. So, you know, we do a lot of websites for them, and they affect. When something happens with the site, maybe they, first of all, if they didn't win, or if, say, something might happen with the site and they're very, very, they get very angry. So, two-part question. Do you feel like millennials are more narcissistic? And then the second part is, what can we do besides recognizing that they're upset to make them feel better, even though, frankly, like 10 minutes ago, this thing didn't exist, and then they get pissed and they tell us how angry they are?
There is no question that the younger people are, the more they're narcissistic. And I think it's mainly because kids have access to all this social stuff that no other generation has ever had before, so they're used to it from a young age. I mean, I've dealt with pretty much like the exact problem that you're talking about many, many, many times. And I really think the easiest thing to do is when somebody starts like bitching and moaning, you can literally send them some like 99-cent BS trinket or little freebie, and they will change their tune. They'll start posting pictures on Twitter. They will all of a sudden like be your friend online. And even, I mean, you could send them something, or even kind of like starting a conversation about something else with them. Like, especially I find like music, film, any common stuff. Like, if you get them off that topic, especially younger kids, like, and show like, oh, you know, you like the Black Keys too, we like that here at our brand. Like, little things like that will get people to change their tune, especially younger kids. But that's a huge, huge problem and can be really tough to deal with, especially when they swarm, you know?
Yeah, I find that kids. A good approach, too, is to just be super prepared. Like, if you're going to have a contest, make sure you have a list of all possible, like, questions and scenarios that might go wrong already. Like, imagine what the worst scenarios could be and have that ready. And always make sure everything works properly. One of our clients is, you know, like a supplements company, so it's like bodybuilders. Like, you can't get more narcissistic. So for us, it's like everything we have to do just has to be so clean, because if it's not, and there's one thing they complain about, one person will. And it's also just, I don't know what it'd be like, human behavior, when if somebody posts something positive, then everybody else is writing things positive. But as soon as somebody puts something negative up, everybody starts chiming in negatively. So for us now, depending on specific clients, it's like, just be sure that cross all your T's, dot all your I's before you even put that contest out there.
Is it? I don't think it's on.
Yeah. Okay.
speak loudly.
I just wondered to vouch for the narcissism in everyone, because I do believe that everyone does have a little bit of narcissism in them, and rightly so. We're on social media, so, you know, we broadcast ourselves. But I just wanted to say that when I was in Japan, I was staying at a Hyatt, and they screwed up my entire accommodation. Basically, you know, when you usually book a room, you would think that two people are going to sleep in a room, right? And so I went with four friends, And I get there, and they said, no, you book two rooms with your name, so everyone else that's in your room, we're going to charge you an extra $50. And I was beyond furious. And they did not change anything. I get up to the room, and I literally tweet to Hyatt Concierge on Twitter, and just furious. Within 5 minutes, I get a call in my room from headquarters at Hyatt, and they're like, oh, sir, we don't know what's going on, so they're trying to figure out what's the problem. Nothing gets resolved. They're apologizing. Oh, sorry, we can't do anything. Hang up the phone, get back on Twitter, and say something else. Like, oh, I was so surprised at the quickness of their customer service that I was like, wow, that's amazing. I've never had a hotel call me to my room with my name. And then they call me back in 5 minutes, sir, we're going to upgrade you. You're good to go. And so we all got upgraded to my original accommodation. So obviously, my little narcissism worked. So yes. I don't know. I just want to vouch for that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It works. No, you can get results that way. There's no question.
So narcissism is also, there are a lot of positive qualities to narcissism. Narcissism very often drives ambition. There are a lot of successful narcissists out there, Bill Clinton, people who use their
Casey Stewart,
Casey Stewart, people use their adoration or their need for adoration to drive them to do great things.
Maybe so, like such a loser right now.
it can be one of the best desires.
One thing that I think everyone here kind of hinted at, but nobody directly spoke to in detail, is the opposite sides of the coin between the narcissistic tendency and the tendency to search for authenticity, and how that flips, especially between generational boundaries. When you look at millennials and the immense amount of evidence that there is out there that we talked a lot about today in terms of the overall narcissistic way of being, and the Gen X totally way of being, which is really around the quest for authenticity in any form of life, and the constant eschewing and almost loathing of falseness, and even a halfway truth is a falseness to a lot of Gen X type people.
Right.
How can you actively be responsive into both when a lot of that will end up alienating the other?
I think that's a really awesome point, and that's something that we've thought about. That's a really, really good point. I think I don't think I have the answer to that, but I think the one practical way that you can address that, at least in the kind of work that most of us do, is by taking that sort of idea of authenticity into a really niche market. Like when you guys were mentioning the reviews before, I don't know if anybody else plays music or whatever, but there's a really fantastic music magazine called Tape Op, TAPEOP, and it's free. You can go online and give them your address, and they'll actually send you a magazine in the mail. And it's super, super authentic, and there's absolutely no falseness to it. But at the same time, it's all driven by ego. It's all music personality guys. But I think because they're in a niche and they only talk about sort of like music gear, that one thing, they're able to straddle that line about authenticity, but at the same time, like the ego you need to run an online business. So I think if you can silo it in a small enough way, it's possible. But once you get out there into that bigger, wider world, it's really hard to find authenticity in a big space like that, especially with younger people. What would Douglas Copeland say?
I can say one, in terms of the those two faces of narcissism, there's often some level of kind of inauthenticity in the false self presentation. The look at me, it's exaggerated, amplified, sometimes superficial. But then underneath, there's that kind of vulnerable narcissistic core. The idea, and this is as a kind of plug for therapy, like the idea is that you're supposed to kind of in a treatment or in a deep conversation or in a good conversation on the media, integrate those two parts, bring them together so that you become a normal human being with positive and negative qualities like everybody else. Somebody who bringing those two parts together and finding that happy middle increases in or authenticity and decreases in authenticity.
All
question, I would like to have like two perspectives from Jacob and Casey. Do you experience that your digital persona is spilling out into your daily life or your daily experience?
Oh, mine is my daily experience. Like, my blog is my life, is my Twitter, is my day. It's all like the same. I'm never not working.
And if that's the case, and it's like a positive persona, what does it do with your connection to like close friends, family? Considering that vulnerability is key to real connection.
I don't really talk that much about my my family. I always say I'm thankful to my mom; she's a big inspiration to me. But I take, after this South by Southwest, I'm probably going to go, chill out at mom's house, eat some good cooking, have a nap on the couch. And I have downtime. Like, I get anxiety, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. Last year after Film Fest, for example, I went up to Muskoka, which is, cottage country, and was, canoeing and wasn't really that much online. Still a little bit, here's my view from the dock. But I really have recognized it. If I'm always, it's like your energy in a vessel, right? So you're putting so much out all the time. It gets depleted, and I have to kind of recluse and go into my cave, and so I can re-energize myself with nature or my family or my offline friends. Otherwise, I get totally overwhelmed and
Can you switch off?
Yeah. I watch Young and the Restless every day, and that's the time where I just step away to Genoa City, and I know it's so silly, but I do, and then that's when I just shut off my brain, and I kind of forget about whatever else is happening, but I just do that because then I can just have that downtime, because otherwise I could freak out.
Do you think staying positive keeps you positive? Does it take away that downtime?
Yeah, it helps. I'm positive, and I have positive people around me, and then more positivity, and just a big rainbows and unicorns everywhere.
I think positivity is great, but I think it's also a really good idea to be in touch with the negative side of yourself, and allowing yourself to be very clear about the ugly feelings, jealousy and envy and contempt and hatred.
You don't think they go away with surrounding yourself with more positive?
Absolutely not.
No, okay.
Absolutely not. You have to figure out a way to have both.
We have about 2 minutes, so we.
I'm from Career Builder, so I have a lot of people that I deal with on a daily basis. They're unemployed and very unhappy and hate me. One of the things we've done that's kind of different is we put I'm on the face of everything social, so it's not just a brand that's by itself. So, and it's kind of actually helped in that people aren't as negative as they used to be. They're kind of afraid because there's a real person, so they don't want to just shit on me all the time. But I guess my question is, then is it two levels of narcissism? There's my own level of narcissism as the face of this brand that I'm bringing to the table to meet these other people who are having kind of a disenfranchised experience with us at times, which is kind of sometimes out of my control. So I'm wondering what is the balance for a brand to kind of meet on a middle ground. I can't pay these people off. But I also can't go, I'm going to find you a job today.
Right.
There's a lot of responsibility that's still left on the individuals, but I'm wondering how do you then kind of turn that still into a positive experience for them long-term with the brand?
I guess part of it is, at the end of the day, do you have a good product? Are you providing a good experience? And if you are, then that's 9/10 of it, or if that's why those people are coming to you. But I hate to fucking say this, but it's engagement. And but more specifically, I found that a lot of times when I've had to be the brand voice for brand X, whatever, that just actually though having a normal conversation with somebody goes so far with them. And especially like I said before, music, books, TV, things that people actually when you bring them up and have a conversation, it has nothing to do with your brand, nothing to do with what you're trying to provide them with. You said people don't want to shit on you because you're a real person, and having those conversations to say, hey, I'm not fucking Hal 2000. I'm some real guy trying to make a living back here. Please stop abusing the shit out of me. Goes a long way. Most people are not horrible assholes. Sorry, I have a filthy mouth. Most people are not terrible, and when they know there's a real person back there, and you're talking and having a real conversation, that will go a long way towards sort of stemming the tide of internet evil that pops up.
Do we have time for one more? Nope. Yeah. No? Okay. Go for it.
Kristen, do you think you need to be a narcissist in order to be an influencer online?
That's a good question.
Well, I guess it depends what you write about. Like, some people write under, like, a different name. They're not themselves. They're like, I'm Dickhead Joe, and they're like, I'm writing a hate blog. They're probably not a narcissist. Maybe they are in some way, but they're not. Like me, I write about my life because I love it. But I don't necessarily think you have to be, but probably helps.
It probably depends on the type of content you're creating,
yeah.
Self-promotion is like kind of an inherently narcissistic endeavor, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're a narcissist because you're doing it.
Yeah. I definitely think that we work with a lot of influencers that aren't narcissists, and we work with a lot that are. Just tend to maybe hear more about the ones that are. But no, I don't think you have to be.
We're done.
We're done.
Awesome. Thank you.